ब्रह्मण्याधाय कर्माणि संगम त्यक्त्वा करोति यः लिप्यते न स पापेन पद्मपत्रम् इभाम्बुषा. One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful actions, as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Here, Brahmani means in Krishna consciousness. The material world is a sum total manifestation of the three modes of material nature, technically called the pradhana. The Vedic hymns, Saravam Yetad Brahma, from the Mandukya Upanishad, Tasmaretad Brahma Nama Rupam Anam Najayate, and in the Bhagavad Gita, Mama Yo Nir Mahat Brahma, indicate that everything in the material world is a manifestation of Brahman. And although the effects are differently manifested, they are non-different from the cause. In the Ishopanishad, it is said that everything is related to the Supreme Brahman, or Krishna, and thus everything belongs to Him only. One who knows perfectly well that everything belongs to Krishna, that He is the proprietor of everything, and that therefore everything is engaged in the service of the Lord, naturally has nothing to do with the results of His activities, whether virtuous or sinful. Even one's material body being a gift of the Lord for carrying out a particular type of action can be engaged in Krishna consciousness. It is then beyond contamination by sinful reactions. Exactly as the lotus leaf, though remaining in the water, is not wet. The Lord also says in the Gita, Mayi saravani karmani sannyasya, resign all works unto me. The conclusion is that a person without Krishna consciousness acts according to the concept of the material body and senses. But a person in Krishna consciousness acts according to the knowledge that the body is the property of Krishna and should therefore be engaged in the service of Krishna. Hare Krishna. I thank you for coming this evening to the auspicious abode of Shyam Gopal and Ras Vilasini Devi. This verse nicely gives the idea of this house. The conception and the proprietors in their building this house was to have a place to serve the Lord and to serve the devotees of the Lord. It was designed with this in mind. Herein, Bhagavad Gita describes that performing one's duty is only material if we have material conception. Krishna declares that one who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful action, as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. Prabhupada herein describes the nature of the material world. It is the sum total of three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. These modes of material nature impel the living being to engage in various activities, sometimes pious and sometimes sinful. sinful actions are destined to bring about the reaction of suffering. Actually, we have a choice of what we do, but once we perform our act, we have no choice what the reaction will be. You have a choice whether you put your hand in fire or not. But once you put your hand in the fire, you have no choice, the reaction. You will get burnt. You have a choice of what airlines to take. But once you get on the airplane, you have no choice of where you're going. So we have free will. But once we use our free will, then there is no free will as to what our reaction will be. Man or woman makes his or her own destiny. What is our destiny? What we have created in the past? That is what we are now. And our future will be what decisions we make today. Rupa Goswami describes that when you perform a sinful activity, papam means sin, then there's two types of reactions, prarabdha and aprarabdha. Prarabdha means manifested sinful reactions, various types of sufferings, suffering of the body and mind, suffering by other living beings, suffering from natural disturbances. But there's also aprarabdha, which means unmanifested sinful reactions. Those unmanifested sinful reactions are like in a seed, kutam. Whenever we perform a sin, whether or not the reaction of suffering comes upon us, something very serious takes place. Every time we perform that activity, the inclination to do it again develops deeper and deeper in our heart. That is called kutam. The inclination is nourished. That inclination develops into bijam, or a particular sinful desire. That sinful desire practically pushes us and forces us into, again, papam, or sinful activities. And then again, that sinful activity increases our sinful inclinations, which manifests in more sinful desires, which pushes us to engage in the sinful activity again, and the whole cycle continues, birth after birth after birth after birth. And now and then, there are the actual physical and mental reactions that come upon us. So Krishna explains here in Bhagavad Gita that although living in this world where there are so many influences that push us into the acting according to the three modes of material nature, we should be, as Jesus Christ says in Bible, in this world but not of this world. Krishna uses the same example of being in this world but not of this world in a very special terminology, that we should be like a lotus leaf within the water. The nature of the lotus leaf, which differentiates from any other leaf, is water cannot remain on it. Even if a lotus leaf is in it, sewage water, it will remain completely fresh and pure. Not a drop can remain on it. You put water on lotus leaf immediately, it just flies right off it. So how to live in a world of the three modes of material nature and not be affected by the three modes of material nature? Not be degraded by the modes of material nature? That is really the subject of Bhagavad Gita. That is really the purpose of life. How to perform our duties within this world without egoistic, selfish attachments. It seems quite impossible. Daivihyeshu gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. Krishna tells it is very, very difficult. very difficult to not be affected by the three modes of material nature and not be ruled over by them. Actually, in the general society, especially in Kali Yuga, most of our population is simply ruled, controlled by the three modes of material nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. And as Kali Yuga progresses, the modes of passion and ignorance become more and more and more predominant. People look for their pleasure in life through trying to follow the dictations of the modes of nature. Or Maya. Maya is the illusory energy of the Lord. Why do we call Maya the illusory energy? Because what she promises us and what she convinces us of is really not to our best interest. It's false. It's a big lie. From within our mind and from so much promotion and propaganda outside of ourselves, we're being convinced that just by being a consumer, just by consuming various objects, whether it be human objects or animal objects or inanimate objects, we will be happy. But it's impossible. Why? Because we're not this body. We're essentially spirit souls. Rupa Goswami defines the fundamental need of every living entity is to love someone and be loved by someone. That's the nature of the soul. That is our constitutional position. To be loved by God and to love God. And this material manifestation where dukalayam ashashvatam, Krishna warns us from the very beginning, it is a place of misery because everything is temporary. The eternal soul cannot be happy in a place where all pleasures are temporary. We are looking for everlasting love and everlasting joy. That is simply reality. But the illusory energy, or Maya, is sometimes defined as that which is not. To understand that is very, very essential for our spiritual survival. The body exists. The senses exist. And the soul exists. To think that I am this body is Maya. That which is not. Yes, the body exists. Yes, the soul exists. But the soul is not the body. The soul is in the body, but is not the body. And when Maya presents so many temptations, you will be happy if you fulfill your body in this way, your bodily desires, your mental desires. That which is not. It actually does not in any way, shape, or form fulfill the needs of the soul. And Krishna explains in the Gita, and all the great, from Buddha to Shankaracharya, to Jesus, to one thing that every transcendentalist agrees on, unanimously, even though there may be different conclusions amongst great philosophers, they all agree on one thing, of the transcendental philosophies, the yoga systems and religions of this world. And that is that the temporary pleasures of the world are distractions from our real goal of life. They cannot bring inner fulfillment or real fulfillment. What we require, Gita explains, param drishtva nivartate, the higher taste. Therefore, by the process of understanding everything's relationship to Krishna, we can enter into the higher realm of truth. Some philosophers, when they hear the definition of Maya, that which is not, they interpret it that everything except God, Brahman, is not. It doesn't exist. That actually your body really doesn't exist. And your senses don't exist. And your desires don't exist. And your attachments don't exist. And your family doesn't exist. And even the words we're speaking don't exist. Nothing exists except Brahman. But factually, Maya is Krishna's external energy. Maya does exist. And every single manifestation of Maya does exist. What is the illusion? Our perception. This microphone exists. Now, the illusion is to think that this microphone is mine and will give me enjoyment. That is Maya, that which is not, because it is not mine. Nothing is mine. Ultimately, Krishna explains in Gita, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, everything is the property of the Supreme. Everything is ultimately under the control of the Supreme. Parashya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate, the Lord has multifarious energies. All of these energies are emanating from the Supreme, therefore they have a connection to the Supreme. Therefore, they are real. But when we don't understand them in relation to Krishna, that's where all illusion and that's where all suffering is born. So yes, this microphone is the property of God. And if it is the property of God, then my nature eternally is to use it according to the will of God, in the service of God. That is reality. Om Purnamada Purnimadam. Krishna says, all emanations from the Absolute are perfect and complete because Krishna is perfect and complete. Material energy is perfect and complete. Material energy is wonderful when we understand it in relation to Krishna. For a devotee, seeing the trees and the flowers and even seeing the sufferings of this world, it may bring about compassion, but as everything a devotee sees in the realized state, he sees the connection to Krishna. Even the shadow, we understand its relationship to the sun. The shadow cannot exist without the sun. If you turn your face toward the sun, you will see light. If you turn your face away from the sun, you will see shadow. So a devotee, wherever he sees that Krishna is the source, and he sees how ultimately everything is related to Krishna and how to reciprocate with Krishna in every situation. On this block, there are so many houses, and it is not for me to judge what everyone's mentality is in their houses. But most likely people are thinking, this is my house. You see, I have the deed. Of course, that's even quite rare these days. Most of the time it's the bank's house, and we're saying it's my house, but actually if you don't pay them, you're out. So it's the bank's house, but we're calling it our own. But some rare souls actually pay off the bank in their life. And then the bank actually gives them the deed. Then you can, by relative truth, you can say, it is my house. But actually, according to logic and according to Gita, did you create the material elements? God created the wood, God created the stone, God created every chemical that's there in the house, every element in the house. And ultimately, in the form of time, he's going to take everything away from you and you have no power to protect it. Yes? People get old, they're so attached to their houses, they just can't give it up. And sometimes people are so obsessed with their attachments that, yes, material nature gives them the chance. They can become a ghost, and they haunt anyone who comes to the house, because this is my house. Who are you to enjoy it? Yes, but then how long could they enjoy it? It is not. So, yes, different people, everybody has their own mentality, but most people are thinking, this is my home, this is my car, this is my family, this is my wealth, this is my body. But a person who philosophically examines these realities understands that nothing is mine. Everything is under the control of higher powers, the power of God. Therefore, let me just be honest. Really, being Krishna consciousness is so simple. What it really comes down to is being honest. That's all. Just being honest with the reality that my body, my mind, all my possessions, everything is the property of God. So let me use it all for that purpose. That is why the Lord comes into this world again and again, or sends his prophets or his devotees to teach us that same universal principle. How to utilize everything in the service of the Lord. When you water the root of the tree, automatically every part of the tree is satisfied. No matter how much water you supply to every other part of the tree will dwindle and die with all of its parts unless the root is watered. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate. Krishna is the root of everything that exists. He is the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. When we please Krishna, then we actually please the real needs of our heart, of our soul. It's such a simple idea. It's just a matter of being honest. This body is meant for service. And in that service, we can actually derive the ultimate satisfaction because we're watering the root of our own existence, Krishna. Real happiness comes by pleasing Krishna. And Maya's delusion, the delusion that Maya creates, is we're thinking we can be happy separate from Krishna. And thus, all of the karma of the world is coming about from this simple, basic misconception. That living entities are thinking that they could be happy separate from Krishna. That living entities are thinking that I am the proprietor and I am the enjoyer. Culmination of this same chapter, 5 of Gita. Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrishchati. Everyone wants peace. People are going to psychiatrists and psychologists due to depression because they want some peace. We were just discussing. Technology is and science, their achievements are like never before in history. Actually, the 20th century was quite amazing. If you look at modern history, all other centuries, things happen very gradually. But just talk to your grandfather. If you're an American, if you're Indian, you have to... something like that. But when my father was a little boy, just about 80 years ago, not even that, 70 years ago, just 70 years ago, it was a depression, first of all. And people were starving all over America because there was no money. Because the artificial system of the stock market crashed. There was starvation and poverty throughout the nation. The vast majority of people were unemployed. And they didn't know how they were going to survive. There was no such thing as television. Even 70 years ago, people would just gather around their radios for entertainment. There's no tape recorders, no CDs. People would just gather around their radios to listen to people talking. Huh? And when the first TV came out, I think it came out in 1930s or something, at a world fair in somewhere in New York or something, where RCA introduced the television. And people were just, it was just about this big and it was black and white and it was all kinds of static and friction. And people were thinking, this is a miracle, unbelievable. You can actually see somebody from thousands of miles away. How do you know? Not even thousands. We're all local stations. From the other part of the city. Huh? And the automobiles, you know, very, you know, Henry Ford only made one model, the Model T. Just one model, that's all. He wasn't into variety. He just, one model for it. Make it economic so the common people can drive. No, and you know, you have to crank it up to start it. And look at now. Telephone in those days, you know, even 70 years ago, you had to crank the phone and everything was party lines. You just crank it and crank it, and then you get the operator and you tell the operator, you know, please, you know, connect me to this number, and whenever she gets time, she'll connect you to that number by putting different wires and switches. And flying, nobody flew in airplanes. And now look, everyone's flying around and there's cellular phones and computers. There was no such thing as computers. This is 70 years ago. Can you imagine? Look at what happened just in a matter of two generations of human beings. Satellite TV, television, computer technology, cellular phones. Incredible the fast rate in which technological scientific progress has created facilities for people to use to enjoy. Unbelievable. But people are taking more antidepressant pills than ever before, too. Depression is a severe problem in the world today. Why? Because the more we try to satisfy our inner desires through all these artificial processes, Maya, that which is not, the more we become frustrated. So there's a big problem in the world today. And there's a simple solution to simply understand what real peace means. Peace of mind can only come when we live honestly in harmony with reality. To the degree we become artificial, there's going to be so much turbulence in our lives. And what is that reality? Krishna explains the peace formula in Gita, that I am the proprietor of everything that exists, that ultimately everything is meant to be used in relationship to me. And I am everyone's well-wisher. When we live by these three principles, we can achieve peace. There happens to be no other way. Human civilization has experimented with trillions of other ways and is still experimenting and have never found anything that really works. Because it's all dishonest. It's all unnatural. It's not real. The real process is to understand how everything is the property of God and utilize, live within this world in such a way that everything is in the service of God. That is yoga, union. Yoga means union. Religion means to be reunited, to be bound back to the Lord, to use everything we have, our body, our minds, our words, and the things of this world, both animate and inanimate, to reunite with God through love, through service. The principle of exploitation, wanting to be the selfish enjoyer, is the root of all suffering. Prahlad Maharaj said it simple. He was a 5-year-old boy. He said it simple. If you want to stop suffering, stop trying to be happy in this world. It's as simple as that. As long as you're trying to be happy in this world, you have to suffer. Because you're in a fool's paradise. You're dreaming. Arivo. But how do we stop trying to be? We have to look for happiness in this world. But when we understand that the world is God's world, it's not our world, it's God's world. And He's sharing everything in great abundance with us if we simply reciprocate. Everything that exists is meant to facilitate love. That is the beautiful conception of spiritual life. That everything that exists is a facility to express our love, our eternal soul's love, rather than everything that exists is a facility for me to exploit. When we perceive everything in that way, according to the truth, then we are not implicated by the three modes of material nature. We are no longer controlled by sins and sinful reactions. Rupa Goswami describes that devotional service liberates one, purifies one of every level of sinful action and reaction. Even those inclinations, the seeds, the kutam, and the desires, the bijams, they are all cleansed, they are all purified when we desire the loving service of the Supreme Lord. And then while living in this world, we can remain like a lotus leaf and do wonderful benefit for the world through the beauty of our lives. A lotus flower and a lotus leaf is most, it's considered the symbol of beauty within this world. If something or someone is lotus-like, that means so beautiful, so pure, so wonderful, right? You don't call a criminal lotus-like. You are a lotus-like criminal. He's a lotus-like rapist, or a lotus-like murderer, or a lotus-like lotus-like sewage. What is most beautiful you call lotus-like, because lotus is the symbol of beauty. So even within this world, whatever the particular condition may be, a devotee is lotus-like because a devotee is manifesting the beauty of God's grace and is unaffected by the corruption, the tribulation, and the exploitation of the world around him or her. That is the beauty of life. And if we think it's impossible, we are correct. It is impossible to attain that state on our own, because we're already victims of Maya since time immemorial. But Krishna tells, Daivi heshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam evam ye prapadyante maya meta tarantite. That although this energy of mine, material nature, is very difficult to overcome, if you just take shelter of me, you will easily cross beyond it. Because there is a higher power than the power of Maya or illusion, and that's the power of the grace of God. And bhakti means to take shelter, to connect our lives to that energy of the Lord's grace. And Krishna explains, if you're just sincere, if you are simply sincere, I will preserve what you have and I will carry what you lack. That is all Krishna wants to see as us. Krishna knows our weaknesses. Krishna knows our vices. Krishna knows our complicated material conditionings. Krishna knows how the modes of nature are affecting us since time immemorial, and the various attachments we have and the various shortcomings we have. But that is not really so important. If we're simply sincere, if we're sincere to live according to Krishna's will, to live a life of service, to live a life with the intention to express our love for God and for His creation, then Krishna will give us all help. As it is said, God helps those who help themselves. There's a whole philosophy of how that works in Bhagavad Gita, how God helps those who help themselves. But we must have faith. We must have faith that, yes, God will help those who help themselves. We must have faith in the power of God, in the love of God, and we must have faith in the mercy of God. And then if we sincerely, simply try to live by Krishna's merciful instructions, whatever the instructions are given, it's not for His benefit, it's for our benefit. We shouldn't be threatened by the magnanimous will of God. It's an invitation to go back home, back to Godhead. We should rejoice. And we should be honest and sincere and really try our best. Some people think being honest means just giving in to our conditioned state. Yes, sometimes devotees think like this. That, yes, I'm fallen and I want to take this LSD or I want to drink this alcohol. So I'm just being honest, so I'm doing it. Yes? Is that really being honest? It's on a relative level, it's being honestly dishonest. But Krishna doesn't want us to simply be honestly dishonest. He wants us to be honest. Tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam. Therefore, Krishna says that if you want real happiness, tapasya is the process. Tapasya means putting aside our own temporary mental and sensual demands for the sake of a higher principle, a higher cause. Shreyas and prayas. But everyone is doing that on various levels. Just like some of your students, Vrindavanath Prabhu, Krishna Balaram Prabhu, do you really taste nectar when you're studying your books? Not always. Sitaram Devi, do you taste nectar in your studies? Do you feel exhilarated when you come out of a day of school? But you study. That's tapasya. Even though it's hard and you'd much rather be doing so many other things, yes? You know, your soul, spiritually, you'd rather be at kirtan and you'd rather be with the devotees and you'd rather be doing some seva, cooking for the deities or something. And other parts of you may be rather going to the movies, I don't know. But certainly, you'd rather be doing other things. But you study because you have an idea that there's a higher purpose. There's a greater inner fulfillment to life in performing these austerities for a future higher reality. Yes? That's how you stay in school. And to remain faithful in any relationship, there's always so many alternatives. You have to perform tapasya to maintain a friendship with somebody. You have to tapasya to maintain a marriage together. You have to tapasya to tolerate your parents and your children. Yes? It's tapasya. But you do it because there's a higher cause. You know, sometimes a parent just wants to just crush their child. But tapasya is So, man, what to speak of working in this world? How many people like to work? Sometimes you may like to work. But most people, really, their jobs here in America, it's a hard struggle for existence. But they know if they don't, then they'll be in poverty. And that will be horrible. Even though it's more fun immediately. But what is the future? So anything good in this world means you have to perform tapasya. To do anything right in this world, you have to perform some sort of tapasya. You know, these champion athletes, it's not that they're just born champion athletes. They have to work and struggle and strive and give up so many things they'd rather be doing to become, you know, a champion. Then they actually get some sense gratification. So Krishna says, Tapo divyam putra kayena sattva. Human life is meant for tapasya. But what is the real tapasya? for the real goal of the soul, to be willing to give up those things, those inclinations, those tendencies, those temptations that are unfavorable toward progress. That is tapasya. And actually in Krishna consciousness, tapasya is blissful if we just have the proper attitude. Because Krishna consciousness is the art of replacing the negative with the positive. By utilizing our mind, by utilizing our senses in dynamic, constructive Krishna conscious activities. Yes, we have the inclination to live in a house. So one type of tapasya, well, I want to live in a house, so no, forget it. I'm going to live in the forest. I'm going to take my wife and my baby and we're going to live in the jungle to somehow or other extinguish this desire to have a house. No, that's one way of doing. Another way of doing is, I want to live in a house. I'm going to work so hard. I'm going to get the best possible house. And we're going to enjoy like anything. We're going to have prestige and people are going to come over and praise us for our beautiful house. And we're going to enjoy, we're going to have televisions, and we're going to have radios, and we're going to have record players, and so many things. So one is bhoga, one is getting a house for enjoyment, one is rejecting the house in the name of renunciation. But bhakti, the path of bhakti, is perfect and complete. Yes, I have this inclination for house, let me use the house for Krishna. Let me put deities in the house. Let me invite devotees in the house. Let us chant the holy name in the house. All our cooking in the house will be offered to Krishna. We will be living by following the regulative principles, doing our sadhana in our house. Our house becomes a temple. Our house becomes the abode of the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, when I come home to my house, I see Goloka Vrindavan. When a husband and wife and children are Krishna conscious, the house is Vaikuntha. It's the spiritual world. That's the wonderful way of using everything for Krishna. You can use your car to go to the brothel. You can use your car to go to so many material. If you're working for Krishna, if you're using the car to go to the temple of Krishna, then your car is a spiritual vehicle, a vimana. It's being utilized in so many ways for Krishna's service. So in this way, everything, our clothes, our facilities, simply by understanding the spirit of servitude to God, we can always remain like a lotus leaf, even in this muddy world of dualities. That is Krishna consciousness. All that is required really is that we really try to be honest and sincere. We perform the basic tapasya of trying to channelize our energies in a way that is harmonious to our real interest. And it may be difficult, but in enduring those difficulties we find inner fulfillment and substance. Because Krishna reciprocates from within. But in giving up, we become empty and depleted inside. Although externally there may be some nice thrills. But happiness is within. Substance is within. So yes, Krishna explains, one who performs his duty. And when he's speaking about duty now, he's speaking about worldly duties. He's not talking, because he's saying one who performs his duty without attachment. That doesn't mean deity worship. You're supposed to be attached to the deity. That means performing all your duties without attachment to sense gratification. Actually, you can even, doing deity worship without attachment means attachment to the deity, attachment to the pleasure of the Lord, but no attachment for my own separate desires. So Krishna says, one who performs his duty without attachment, that means egoistic attachment. Whatever we do, we should do with attachment to Krishna, attachment to pleasing Krishna, attachment to attaining love for Krishna. Surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord is unaffected by sinful action, as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. Does anyone have any questions about this verse today?
What is the difference between depending on Krishna and faith on Krishna? And when a situation demands one of these, what should be the thinking of a devotee?
The difference between depending on Krishna and having faith in Krishna? Faith in Krishna is preliminary. It is foundational. If we do not have faith in Krishna, how will we depend on Him? To have faith in Krishna is foundational to every aspect of our spirituality. To the degree we have proper faith, to that degree we will depend on Krishna. Faith means to understand beyond the purview of our mind and senses is the Supreme Absolute Truth. Faith gives us the power to see the invisible. We may not see Krishna as the proprietor of this microphone, but with our faith we know that He is. We know that He's there within our heart, although we don't see Him. And our faith comes from associating with people with faith and hearing from them. Hearing from the Holy Scriptures, from those who have proper faith, our faith naturally awakens, develops, and becomes our very foundation in life. And when we have proper faith, then naturally we understand that Krishna is the supreme controller and He's the ultimate only shelter. So we learn to depend on Krishna. We depend on the power of His holy name to overcome all obstacles. Yes? A baby child is dependent on the mother. Prabhupada said this is the way we should chant the holy name, like a child crying for its mother, depending on the mercy of Krishna through His name. So when we have a little bit of knowledge, just a little bit of knowledge of the truth, we understand that we are completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord at all times. Can you live without air? Who supplies the air? Can you live without water? Who supplies the water? Could you live without sunlight? Who supplies the sunlight? Can you live without food? Who supplies all the food grains? Mother Earth. Yes? The energy of God. So a little bit of knowledge, we understand we are 24 hours a day completely depending on the mercy of the Lord. Even when you eat, you don't know what's happening. It's being digested. It's happening by God's arrangement, not by yours. Yes? So we are completely dependent. So faith and having faith in God and depending on God are inseparable. Does that answer your question? When a problem comes, unless we have guidance of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, we will not know the proper method of overcoming the problem. Speculation will not help us. If we're taught the basic ideals and principles by a proper spiritual master, according to the Holy Scriptures, then we understand how to deal with problems. Problems are actually opportunities. Every problem is an opportunity for deeper realization. We have to see it in that way, and we have to learn to respond to problems so that they are opportunities for deeper realization. Otherwise, problems simply confuse us, bewilder us, and depress us. Yes? or entangle us. Even if we solve the temporary problem, we may be more incriminated in material illusion through the process. Yes? So obstacles and problems, when seen through the eyes of truth, are great opportunities for spiritual advancement. And that's why they come in a devotee's life. We should understand that any temptation, any obstacle, any reversal that comes in a devotee's life is a perfect situation for that devotee to become enlightened. If we just understand it properly and respond to that obstacle properly. But if we do not respond properly, then that obstacle could become our downfall. So we need proper spiritual vision, which comes through spiritual education, to see the opportunity that comes in every situation in life. Does that answer your question?
Thinking that Krishna will take care of the problem, is that the right way of thinking? And concentrating on doing devotional service to Krishna.
Devotional service to Krishna. Specifically, what are you talking about?
Any general problem.
No, you have to be specific.
For example, any problem from friends or relatives, kind of. So, the problem comes usually to the maximum extent.
It depends on the nature of the problem. Superfluous problems, we may not have to tend to them at all. We just concentrate on our devotional service and march on with life. But domestic problems that will affect your devotional service, if they're not tended to properly, you must tend to them. But you must also understand how to do it in such a way that you will prosper in your spiritual life. Shyam Gopal has to pay his mortgage. Now that's a problem. Right? Now this house facilitates his devotional service. Correct? So, he can't just say, well, I'm just going to do devotional service and Krishna's going to pay the rent. That's not Krishna consciousness. That is laziness. That's being irresponsible. And Krishna says egoism and laziness are the two great enemies to our spiritual progress. So this is a facility that's facilitating his Krishna consciousness, yes? So he must solve the problem. But he should do it in Krishna consciousness. No, you cannot be lazy and say Krishna will do it. You're supposed to be Krishna's servant, not that Krishna's your servant. You should do it, but you should be depending on his mercy, knowing that you can't do anything without his mercy. Depending on Krishna is just a matter of being honest. Can he work without Krishna's grace? Krishna's giving the air, Krishna's giving the water, Krishna's giving the food, Krishna's giving the ability in man, the intelligence of the intelligence. Everything we're working with is coming from Krishna. Just be honest and understand, Krishna, whatever I'm doing is by your grace, so I'm going to do it in such a way that you're pleased. But we shouldn't think, Krishna, you do it. No, we should do what is our duty to do, but we should do it in Krishna consciousness. Does that answer your question? Yes.
So based on the type of the problem, then we need to attend the problem.
Yes, of course.
If the problem is superfluous, then we should not even think that Krishna is going to take care of it. We should just ignore and try to focus on Krishna.
Yes. If the situation is unfavorable for devotional service, then it's not necessary for us.
We should not even think that Krishna will take care of it. We should just keep it.
Doesn't matter if he does or not. What is your duty to do? You should do it in Krishna consciousness. Prabhu or Krishna has been sustaining this universal creation since time immemorial. It's not that he's depending on you. Krishna is making the sun rise every day.
Yes.
Practically everything in creation Krishna is doing without your participation. He's doing everything ultimately. Yes? However, within the realm of your responsibilities and your duties that you have in your life, you are responsible to do them properly, but not as an exploiter, as a loving servant. Yes? You're from India? Okay, so what could you do to resolve the nuclear threat between India and Pakistan? Huh? It's not that you have to worry about it all day and just chant Hare Krishna. Just chant Hare Krishna, read Srimad Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, and perform the duty that you are assigned in your life. And leave the rest to... Yes? So it is very important that we must be responsible for the duties that are connected to our own spiritual lives. And if we're grihasthas, we are responsible for the duties of our domestic life for the purpose of facilitating our spiritual lives. And brahmacharis don't have those responsibilities. But if you're a grihastha, you have to do it right. You have to be responsible. Yes? Because Bhishma Dev was doing what Krishna wanted him to do. Krishna wanted him to fight on the wrong side. Bhishma was surrendering to Krishna. Because Krishna wanted to show the world the greatest person in the whole world, the most powerful, learned, if he's not on the side of God, will ultimately be defeated. Yes? So to teach that world a lesson, he was willing to fight on the wrong side. But because he did it for Krishna, he went back to Godhead. Very well. So we... You cannot understand any scripture without Guru. Tadvijnanartham sugurum eva abhigacchate. Without Guru in parampara, all the scriptures are confusing and there are so many interpretations. Why Ram did this, why Krishna did this, why Bhishma did this, why Arjuna did this. And if we try to figure it out with our own intelligence, we'll be very much baffled. That's why tadvidipranipatina pariprasnena seva. If we want to understand the truth, Guru is teaching us what the scripture means through disciplic succession. So Prabhupada explains in the pages of Bhagavatam that because Krishna wanted to teach the world that even the most powerful person will be overcome if he's not on the side of God. Therefore, Krishna desired Bhishma because he was the most powerful man in the world to teach the world a good lesson. But even though the lesson's so clear, people can't understand it without Guru Parampara. Yes? Bhishma was a very, very great devotee. Even though he was on the side of Duryodhana, physically, if you read Mahabharata, the whole time, his heart, he actually wanted the Pandavas to win. And he knew he would be killed, and he knew he would be lose. What a great devotee. For the sake of Krishna, he was willing to lose. He knew. And he was telling Duryodhana and telling everybody that if you're against Krishna, you cannot win. Bhishma said, I could kill and defeat the vast majority of the Pandava army, but we're not going to win the war. Ultimately, we're going to lose. Because Krishna's on their side. So he knew that. He was in no illusion. But yet he knew Krishna wanted him on the other side to teach the world a good lesson. Because if Bhishma was on the Pandava side, it wouldn't have even been a match. But Krishna wanted to show the world. And even though he was going to be misunderstood by people like you for the rest of time, he was willing to do that for the service of Krishna. Yes? There you are. So many people misunderstand him. And he knew that. He was very learned. He didn't mind whatever anybody says. But I must do what Krishna wants. That is his total, total surrender. It's glorious. He was simply an instrument, a puppet in Krishna's hands to help Krishna in his mission of establishing Dharma in the world. But we find so many examples of that. There was little tiny Prahlad, this big, and Hiranyakashipu. Yes, Hiranyakashipu had armies. He was physically so powerful he could defeat any of the devatas. And Hiranyakashipu and all of his powers and all of his infrastructure of military could not defeat little Prahlad. Right? Ultimately, Hiranyakashipu was finished. To show, Prahlad was on the side of God. And factually, who was Hiranyakashipu? Jai and Vijay. It's the same principle. Jai and Vijay are the associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha. At the outside the gate, they were standing. And Jai and Vijay were willing to take the role of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Kumbhakarna, Ravana, Shishupal, and Dantavakra just to assist the Lord in his mission. Does that answer your question? Very well. And what is that mission? To show, however great you are, however powerful, if you are offending the devotees, you will be destroyed. If you are not on the side of the Lord, you will be destroyed. Is there any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
So after understanding the Maya's nature and activities...
What is the time? Huh? This is the last question.
So after understanding the Maya's activities and its deceiving nature, do we have to hate the Maya or do we have to appreciate the Maya?
You should appreciate with hatred. He asked whether we should hate or appreciate. Not exactly hatred, but we should understand Maya's role is ultimately, for a devotee, Maya helps us become more Krishna conscious. But in order for us to become more Krishna conscious, we have to understand that she is actually a friend who's working as an enemy. Her ultimate intent is to put us in such a condition that we surrender to Krishna wholeheartedly. Yes? But in order to do so, she serves as our only enemy from within and without by creating so many conditionings and so many temptations and so many aversions. She's trying to tear you away from Krishna at every step. Yes? So if we say, oh yes, you're my friend, go ahead, tear me. Wherever you take me, I trust you. Then you'll remain in the material world forever. You have to understand she's actually your enemy. She's trying to take you away from Krishna from within and without at every step. And I have to fight against her. I have to fight the mind. I have to fight Maya in my mind. I have to fight Maya in my senses. I have to fight Maya in the objects around me. Yes? But we have to understand the ultimate energy that's causing that is meant to really create the necessity of surrendering to Krishna helplessly in order to withstand her onslaughts. Yes? So on a higher level, We may appreciate Maya as Krishna's divine energy. But on the lower level, we have to see that the various manifestations of Maya that's coming, we have to fight against. Yudhisthira actually loved Duryodhana, right? So did Arjuna. They actually loved him as a cousin. But they fought against him brutally because he was trying to destroy them. Yes? But Maya is actually, Radharani is Yoga Maya. Radharani Yoga Maya is the energy of Srimati Radharani that brings us closer to Krishna. And Mahamaya is that energy that pushes us away from Krishna. Yes? So now we are under the influence of Mahamaya. We should understand that it's actually the same energy. It's just working differently according to the recipient. When I surrender to Krishna, that same Mahamaya becomes Yogamaya and brings us closer to Krishna. But because I don't want to be with Krishna since time immemorial, Maya is pushing us away. So on a higher level, we understand that Maya is the divine energy of Krishna. But her manifestations are trying to take me away from Krishna. Therefore, I must fight like anything. That's what Gita teaches, how to fight Maya. And ultimately, the only way we can fight Maya is, in the end, ultimately, we realize the only way we can fight against Maya is to surrender to Krishna. And when we come to that conclusion, we realize, thank you, Maya. You have brought me to this point. If you didn't bring me to this point, I would have probably never, for the rest of eternity, surrendered to Krishna. Yes? And then when we surrender, then we achieve the ultimate. Does that answer your question? Hari. So Maya is your enemy. You have to fight against her. Don't ever trust Maya. She'll try to present herself as your best friend. Never trust her. Put your faith in the words of Krishna. Maya is always there to cheat you. Hari. But how she's working and how she keeps the entire world in such complete, total illusion, we can actually appreciate her genius. We can appreciate her unbelievable creativity, but we don't want to be a part of that. Yes. Hari Bol. We'll have a few minutes. Should we just have prasad now? Because it's quite late. Huh? I'm your servant, Prabhu. You can dance, but someone should protect the deities from your dancing.